CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded, the show where we discover and explore the extraordinary link between human and brand behavior. I'm Timothy Maurice, and after all, brands impact people and their psyche, and it's people who build brands. So we endeavor to unpack the minds of people and the psychology of the brands that they drive. Today we have Nick Haralambos.
Nice.
And he's an entrepreneur and sock designer, retailer, etc. And he's embarked on this campaign called sort of the Month of Love. I'll give you a little bit of background before we go into the conversation. You know, he was quoted as sort of saying, this year I want us to celebrate our freedom to choose love in any kind and any shape. So as the owner of the premium men's sock and accessory company, NickHarry.com. So if you want to follow the conversation as you're listening to the podcast, you know, we can multitask nowadays. Just go to NickHarry.com. He's built his business on the philosophy that men have the right to choose. Nick, welcome to Unbranded.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about this. First of all, why men, not women?
Well, I'm a man, and I kind of do what I know. I've never worn a bra, so can't really make a bra. Many men would probably disagree, like Versace, but whatever.
Sure.
So, yeah, the business started in 2012, and it was sort of a reaction to me not having choice. You walk into a YDE or an Edgar's, and it's 90% women stuff, 10% men stuff, and the 10% of stuff that's available for men is black, white, gray, beige. And I think that's crap. I'm tired of men wearing the same plain stuff. So we figured it's easier to get men to buy accessories that are bold and daring, and those are the words that we like to use, than to get them to buy a suit that's bold and daring. So we started with accessories, and our tagline is dressing men from the ground up. So awesome. We started with socks.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say this on air rather than off air. But I want to introduce you to someone who used to mentor me named Alexander Julian, if you haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
So he's sort of considered as seen as the father of color in men's fashion.
Wow.
He mentored Tommy Hilfiger and got him into the business and so forth. And he sold his brand called Colors,
okay,
many years ago.
Yeah.
And he's sort of getting it back now. So it's back into Macy's and so forth. But I think you guys would get along.
Amazing. I'd love
it. It could
that.
Be really, really Thank interesting you. Collaboration opportunity.
It's on air now. So
yeah, I'll give you his details. Exactly. I'm going to put a lot of pressure on him.
Thank you.
Were you born and raised in Cape Town?
No, I was born and raised in Joburg, actually, and moved to Cape Town 7 years ago to start my last business, which was a mobile technology company.
So do you set this up as an entrepreneur first?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I'm an entrepreneur first, and I scratched my own itch. So I didn't have brightly colored socks that were the right kind of sock that I wanted, so I made it myself.
It is amazing how people's frustration with not being able to get what they want. From Steve Jobs to any good entrepreneur is fulfilling some sort of
absolutely.
Scratch.
They're not trying to make
itch.
A quick buck. They're trying to scratch an itch. Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Awesome. When did you realize you were different? You didn't wake up different, right?
Well, I don't know, man. So there's a couple of moments. So I remember being an atheist from as young as I can remember. And I went to a Catholic school. My father's a very staunch Christian. I grew up in an Orthodox Greek house. And I was the head prefect at a Catholic school. But I remember being an atheist from like six. So that was kind of the moment when I was like, oh, society's probably not going to dig me that much. Maybe I should try and do stuff differently.
Well, certainly this church society.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think from very young I realized that rules were there to be broken. So learn the rules, go with them, and then break them. And yeah, I remember it from a young age.
And when did you realize that being different could be leveraged for brand potential?
That came around a lot later. So early on in my career, I became a journalist, and my dad kind of forced me into getting a career, which, you know, a good parent wants his kid to have what he didn't have. And I realized very quickly that writing for someone else and building someone else's equity wasn't really what I wanted to do. I wanted to build something that I owned, that I could leverage, and its success was based on me. And if I performed, I succeeded. I didn't want to be at the behest of someone else.
Can you imagine being you 40 years ago?
No.
How frustrating that would have been.
No, absolutely. It must have been insanely difficult to start anything. I mean, I think about how relatively easy it was for me to start this business. 40 years ago, I admire anyone who did something that long ago.
But just think about it, being anywhere in the world and being different.
Yeah.
And, you know, you being, I'm assuming you more identify with being reductionism and so forth.
Definitely.
You know, just the society has evolved a bit, but it's still got a long ways to go.
Hell of a long
way. So you still, I'm sure, dealing with a lot of microaggressions. Because SA is extremely conservative. Yeah. You know, coming here for the first time when I was around just over 30 years old myself, I feel it. Mm. In fact, being in New York, I used to wear a lot of sort of exaggerated, like bright bow ties. But when here I realized I was shooting myself in the foot.
Completely.
Now, this is where it gets interesting for me. Firstly, do you ever feel like you're fighting a losing battle?
No, never. I feel like the battle is taking longer to win, but it's not a losing battle.
So you're winning.
Yeah. You know what? I think this is a broad statement to entrepreneurs of my generation. We think things happen quicker than they do. And they don't. It takes decades to build value. And I'm in the thick of it now. I'm only 5 years in. We're only in our fifth year. So we're 4 years old in our fifth year. So one customer, just one customer that loves our brand is better than we had yesterday. And that's how we focus. We're playing a 5 and 10 year game. I didn't build a brand to flip in 2 years. Building a 5, 10, 15, 20 year company. So one customer at a time, great customer service. And you're right, it is very conservative in South Africa. My number one job in our stores, we have 5 physical locations now, is to educate the customer. Hey, you're wearing a black suit. It's okay to wear red socks, or it's okay to match your blue socks with a red bow tie. That's okay. So education.
And they're like, really?
They're like, what do you mean? No, people are going to look at me funny. And I'm like, yeah, but that's the point, right? If you don't want to be looked at, then just wear your black suit. But I got full sleeve tattoos, and what are you going to do? I'd rather be remembered than forgotten for wearing black.
How large do you think your market is?
Locally, South Africa, I think the market is humorously small. But we're not playing a local game. We have been shipping to about 20 countries since we opened in 2012 through our e-commerce platform. And the idea for us is to grow internationally with our physical retail footprint too. But locally, the market is big enough to build a really good sustainable business. But for 20-year growth, we need to be overseas.
And it's growing. I see people every day who I can see they're wearing those socks for the first time. I can see it by how they're walking. They're nervous.
Yeah.
But then people start complimenting them, and they go, this is not so bad.
Absolutely, it clicks.
So, taking on love is a mammoth task. You ever think love was overrated?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of still do. And my partner and I, Jen, who's also a co-founder in the business, we've been together 12 years, and in 12 years, we've never really celebrated a Valentine's Day. The one Valentine's Day we did celebrate 3 years ago was an absolute unmitigated disaster. Because we hate Valentine's Day, and we thought, fuck it, everyone else does it. We should do it too.
So you succumb to the pressure.
It was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. So we just don't do it. Our approach to the concept of love is it's the little things. When Jen gets home and I've cleaned the house, that's how she feels like I'm showing her that I love her. It's not about roses and hearts and that crap.
So where do you find these Jens? Are they made? I said it like that on purpose. Is that a factory?
That's funny. She's way too good for me. I'm never going to let her go because no one else will have me at this point. No, we actually met at university, and our mutual affinity for style has kind of grown. She's a seamstress who's self-taught. She's never bought a dress that she's worn to a formal event since she was like 10.
Wow.
So she makes all of her dresses. She hand makes a lot of our items, pocket squares, scarves, lapel pins. So we really click on that level. I'm the ideas guy and she's the details person.
So you take on this sort of month of love campaign, but I need to know a little bit more. When did you first fall in love?
That's a great question. With what? I think there's a lot of different ways to think about love. Jen and I have a very practical, not mushy kind of love. We're realistic about how we approach our lives, and that's how I think we stay together and build a business together day to day. That's hard. That shit is tough. It's one thing to be in a relationship for 12 years. It's another to be in a business for 5 years together. So I don't know. I think for her and me, it was very much love at first sight on my behalf. I saw her and I told one of my friends I'd be dating her in a few months, and I was, and we've been together ever since.
Wow.
But we don't believe in marriage. We're not particularly interested in having kids. We're happy with the status quo, with our life the way it is.
Let me just make some notes on try to find this fact.
I know, I've checked all the boxes.
Right?
Okay. That's funny.
So, you know, taking Valentine's Day, which is, you know, commercially an extraordinarily successful concept, and looking at the history of Valentine's Day, etc., you can understand why it appeals to people's, you know, our
idiocies.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it has its upsides. You know, I am...
Give me some.
I'll give you a few. Yeah. I'll give you a few. Like today, you know, I was, before I came here, I bumped into a couple waitresses who said that people are treating them different. Okay. They were paying attention to them.
Okay.
They weren't just a number or a commodity.
Okay.
They actually acknowledged them. And, you know, that's, you know, those are small things, but to your point, you know, it brings out small things in people.
Or it brings out the lie that they perpetuate once a year, because why aren't those people nice every day in the year? Why don't they treat those waiters like people every day?
And I completely
get that's the problem that I have.
Got it. So you want to deal and address that.
Yeah, I want to address the fact that once a year men think it's okay to remember to book a restaurant, and most of the time forget, or to make the person that they are a partner with, man or woman, feel loved. And the rest of the year, it's okay to be busy and to skip their events.
Yeah, so I completely get it. And it's funny because I've seen both sides today. So I saw a guy sort of who I had a meeting with come in to the meeting discombobulated about not being able to find a restaurant. And his excuse was he came up with a list of excuses, but you're so right. But I do want you to acknowledge... Mm. That there are small wins on the day.
Definitely.
That there's some evil. There's, you know, we get all that.
Definitely.
Okay.
Better once a year than never.
And one of the biggest wins is that you get a chance to launch your campaign.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, and this is, for me, is where it gets interesting, because there's always a flip side.
Sure.
You get a chance to share with people something you care deeply about. Mm-hmm. You get a chance to share with people about, you know, some of the deep social injustices, etc. Mm. And you get a chance to bring awareness to your brand.
Yep.
Now, apparently there's been issues. There are some people who have not liked the idea of you having people inside of a bed sort of promoting this sort of idea. Mm. Tell us a bit more about the specific campaign.
So the campaign was launched off the back of our focus as a brand internally is that men have the right to choose. The idea is basically you can choose to be an asshole, and that's your right. We can choose to disagree with that. You can choose to be racist, and I can choose to fight you. Everyone has the right to choose. For us, it starts with the choice of color of your socks, the choice of color of your whatever. And then we thought, with Valentine's Day approaching, men are often overlooked as the receptors of the Valentine's Day love. Interestingly enough, in retail, it's the one day that men try and get out and spend their money rather than women. So we tried to flip that on its head and say, if we had to do it our way with men having the right to choose, who are the people who feel othered? And the people who feel othered are the odd ones, the ones who are in polyamorous relationships, the people who are in open relationships, the people who are in gay marriages or interracial gay marriages. Those people aren't ever targeted. They're never in the ad campaigns. They're never focused on. They're never given a voice to feel like it's okay to buy roses for your two girlfriends. Like, that's normal to a lot of people. It doesn't feel normal to most people, but in the end of the day, I hate the cliche, but what is normal? And as a brand, we're letting you choose. We want you to have the choice.
Do you think President Zuma sent flowers to his wives?
If he didn't, he's in a world of pain. I'm not going to... I mean, look, if he did, it's probably with my money. So
yeah,
I'd rather he didn't. But I mean, look, whatever. So that's the basis of the campaign. The idea, we messed around with a lot of ideas in terms of the quotes we wanted to use and the approach to the campaign. And now that we have four physical outlets and we're opening our next one in 2 days, we have the space, the window space, with lots of feet, thousands of people walking past the windows every day. So we did what most retailers tell you not to do. We closed up our windows with our campaign, so you can't see into our stores. And when I opened the campaign up in Menlyn Park, I watched a group of four men walk past and look at our storefront and go, well, what is that? And then walk back and come inside because they wanted to ask us about the campaign. And the trick about the campaign is it's there to see if you want to see it. And if you don't want to see the controversy, you just see legs and socks and a bed. But if you look deep enough, you'll see that it's two men or three men or four men or five men or three women and two men. Like, if you see it, if you want to see it, it's there.
Got it. And, you know, the, sort of the next step in this campaign, because some people would argue, so after it's a day, it's a month, what's the difference?
Yeah. So the next step for us as a business and as a brand is to stand for choice. And that expands beyond the concept of just love. We sell socks, and socks are not going to change the world. However, the right to choose is going to change the world. You have the right to choose to wear whatever socks you want to wear. And for me, when I used to be a bit younger and wear crazy things, my more conservative jockey friends would be assholes and say to me, oh, that shirt's really gay. Where did you get it? Those men need to fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, those men need to shut up and realize that wearing the same khaki shirt that everyone else wears doesn't make you special or different. And it's okay to be special and different. And that's where the campaign is going. In our heads, as men, the oppressors are men. The other people who tell us not to do stuff are other men. I've never had a woman say to me, ooh, that shirt's really bright. Women go, oh, where did you get that shirt? Men, however, will go, man, dude, I don't know if you can pull that shirt off. They're really judgy. And it's a side of men that women probably don't see very frequently, is when you're with your group of guys, they can be dicks, and they're not really open to change when it comes to the group dynamic. You all dress in a certain way, either you're collar people or you're jacket people, and if you change it a little, you get mocked.
Part of what's why I think people have this sort of rigid sort of references is that society often leverages structure to keep it sort of flowing. And, you know, you take a military uniform, you take, you know, all sorts of uniforms and so forth.
Religion,
whatever, all these things, right? They keep us sort of down a certain path. How much do you want to push and challenge some of these sort of titanic sort of conventional institutions or systems?
Until someone breaks the glass of my window front, we're going to push. I don't think that there's a better time in our history, all the way up until today, to be open and be honest and push. Conservative brands are very hard to break into. If you're going to be a new brand, you can't be conservative. You can't be middle of the road. You can't be gray. You need to be bold and bright. And for us, it's not something we are becoming. It's something we've been. Having started in South Africa with bright socks 5 years ago, and now being one of the biggest sock providers and accessory stores in the country, it's our right to push the boundaries and to make other people feel like they belong in our community. We want people to feel that they are like us. And if you're not like us, that's cool. Like, you don't have to come into my stores. That is absolutely cool. You can go and shop somewhere else who is not embracing openness. We had two guys walk past our waterfront store and see the campaign. And one of the campaigns say, our socks don't discriminate, with an interracial couple in bed together. And they walked past and said to the lady who was in our kiosk, well, we do discriminate, so we'll take our store, our money somewhere else. She was like, absolutely, no problem, have a good day. Because we don't want that person giving us their money.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's dirty money.
Yeah. Really, it's time.
Have malls and retail space been very supportive?
They have not been unsupportive. I think it's the kind of thing that they don't want to get their game into. They want to just let us do our thing. And if it pushes the boundaries too far, then they'll probably step in. One of our investors is involved in Lush, South Africa, and Lush famously does this sort of campaign globally. One of the most famous ones is they got their staff to get into a bath naked in the center outside of their store around the world, because, you know, they don't believe in animal abuse or animal testing or anything like that. So they got their staff to strip down and get into a bubble bath and sit in the bubble bath for the whole day. And the center said to them, no, you must get out. Now it's 11 o'clock in the morning, and they can't get out because they're naked. So they sat in there the whole day and protested animal abuse. They do these campaigns all over the world. In Russia, they protested against the abuse of gay rights, and they actually almost got shut down. I think it was 10 stores in Russia. So they're definitely a shining light in this sort of brand building and space that we're trying to emulate. You got to know what you believe in and believe in it viciously. There's no half measures here.
Got it.
Yeah.
do you have ambassadors? Do you have people you send socks to because they seem to align with your message?
We do. We're trying to realign our ambassador program. In the beginning, to gain traction, we had incredible ambassadors like Dion Chang, Katleho Maboa, Mapsa Maponyani, Herschel Gibbs, the very traditional South African man. Now we're trying to find ambassadors who are quirky. I want to find the Tiddlywinks champion in the world and give them socks and let their community love the fact that they're wearing Tiddlywinks socks. I believe that the future of branding and marketing for brands like myself is niche. I don't think that mass market is going to work for me. We need niche communities to absolutely love us. We need fans. Tim Ferriss is famous for saying, if you're building a brand, just get 1,000 true fans. That's all you need.
Yeah.
1,000 true fans, and then you'll succeed. So we've got 1,000 true fans. We need to keep building.
In terms of your retail footprint across the country, you've got Waterfront, Menlyn.
We've got our first store ever was opened in Whale Street in Cape Town CBD. We're about to relaunch our store in Tiger Valley on Friday in Cape Town. So that's the 17th that store opens. And then we're launching our Rosebank store here in Joburg on Wednesday night. So we'll be open by Thursday. You can come through to Rosebank.
Wow, congratulations on the journey. I see you started with a very small budget.
Yeah.
Give us a couple of tips to entrepreneurs who have a bold vision, have a lot of conviction. Mm. Oftentimes, those type of things turn off investors. Mm. You know, that's the sort of paradox or, you know, the challenge you face with. If you've got a lot of conviction, people often are scared.
Yeah. It's like, it's funny. It's a fine balance. So I didn't start with investments. I invested 5,000 rand of my own money into the business, and we launched the product. We had good product, good designs, and good timing. I think entrepreneurs underestimate timing as a real, real thing. If your timing is off by a year, you're dead. You're dead in the water. So I think our timing was right. We launched, and within 10 days, we'd sold 600 pairs of socks with a partner who's now Superbalist. They were City Mob. And our 5,000 rand had become 30,000 rand. And from there, we've rolled the business and raised money over the last 4 years. In terms of tips, I think it's kind of against the grain at the moment.
But find a gin. That's number one. Right?
Find a gin is number one. My God. Yeah. Without gin, there's no chance this would happen. Absolutely. But I think grind. A lot of my generation and the generation below me forget that it's a grind. Being an entrepreneur is not glorious. It's not well-paying. You might get well-paid at the end of your journey or when your business is up and running, but that is my other tip. It takes 10 years. 10 years to do anything worthwhile, and that's not an arbitrary number. Facebook hit 10 years and became a billion-dollar business. Amazon hit 10 years and started raising huge money after the money they'd raised when they started. All these businesses, they took 10 years to just get started. It takes you 10 years to figure out if you're going to make it or not. I reckon that in an entrepreneur's life of 50 years, you got four businesses in you. If you can do one every 10 years and then see if that one's working and carry on, or stop and do another one. I think doing more than that, you've wasted your time, because 2 years is not enough. You don't know what you are in 2 years in.
Sure.
Yeah.
My favorite sock that I have of yours is purple.
Okay.
They're just a plain color.
Cool.
Do you have plain colors for someone, let's say they want a gray sock? Like, what is your philosophy around color? Like, wool, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't have any black socks.
Oh, we do.
You do have black socks.
Oh, we do. It took me 3 years of pressure. I had customers every week saying to me, we just want a black sock in bamboo. We just want a black sock. And I resisted it, and eventually we got one, because men have the right to choose. If you want to choose a black sock, it's your bag. If you want to buy one from me, even better. We don't actually have a gray sock, interestingly. I have no idea why. It hasn't come up. We do have brown socks with zigzags on them. My color philosophy is to always go with basic geometric and colors that pop. I want any designer out there, I'm sorry I said the word pop. but I do. I like colors that really explode. The difficult part is most men don't yet. They want our biggest selling colors are blues and reds. They're comfortable with blues and reds. I don't know why. It's also region specific. In Pretoria, green doesn't sell.
Yeah, I think it's the whole red tie, blue tie.
Sure. Yeah. One of our biggest selling socks ever is the barbershop, which is red, white, and blue.
Ah, interesting.
And that was the first sock I ever designed, and it's in our top five. But now we're moving towards a bit more muted navies and less pastel, more basic colors. And that seems to be what the South African man is looking for. But we're expanding into Europe, and that means we can be a bit more bold.
Got it.
Yeah.
Your favorite sock?
Wow, that's a tough one. Right now, it's a sock called the Accordion, which looks like one of those accordion machines. But the Barbershop is definitely my all-time favorite. It was the first one, and the fact that it sold so well just makes me happy.
Well, we're excited about the future and the potential of your brand. You can go to www.nickharry.com and your Twitter, your social media?
All of our social media is Nick Harry Style, and you can get us on Instagram and Facebook. We also, one of the things we're known for is our sock subscription. So you can head onto our website and you can buy a sock subscription where we send you random socks every month.
Really?
Yep. And we were one of the first to do that in South Africa.
Nick, thank you so much.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Unbranded. Continue to follow us as we chat to inspiring people, unpack, go behind the scenes of interesting brands, and really sort of decide, help sort of share insights around how brands and people evolve and do amazing things. As you can hear from Nick, there are really special people out there doing really cool stuff. So follow the brand, check them out wherever you are in the world. By the way, Nick, we have people from far and wide because of iTunes, the South Korea, all over the world.
Wild.
So it's a wonderful pleasure to be able to chat to you wherever you are in the world. We'll be back next week with another episode of Unbranded. CliffCentral.com.